It's our Week 16 NFL preview with the Seahawks and Rams, the Bears and Packers, and more. Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Shot Centenier NFL podcast for Thursday, December 18th, 2025. I'm Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He's Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at miketenier.substack.com. We are here to preview the biggest games of Week 16 in the NFL. But first, let's talk about getting a free month of an FTN GOAT subscription. We have worked with our friends at Underdog to hook you up. For a limited time, when you sign up with Underdog with our link or code FTN and play your first $5, you will get $100 in bonus bets, plus a free month of the FTN GOAT subscription on us. There is no better way to gain access to all the DVOA stats, all of FTN Stats Hub, and all the other awesome fantasy and betting tools that FTN has to offer. Sign up for Underdog, play your first $5, and our marketing team will be on the lookout to hook you up for a code for a free month of GOAT. Use promo code FTN on Underdog, terms apply, and offer expires this Sunday, December 21st. So this is your last chance to get your free month of the FTN GOAT subscription. All right. The leading game of the week is Thursday night. It is the first game of the week, and it is DVOA Bowls Part 2. This time, the teams are basically tied, 1-2. This is the 27th regular season meeting of the 1-2 teams. Okay. And the second time that the same 1-2 teams have met twice.
That's right. They were
1-2 when they met last time.
Interesting.
The 2008 Eagles and Giants were 1-2 and met three times, including the playoffs.
Wow. Well, I have memory wiped the fact that the 2008 Eagles and Giants were good.
Yeah, well, that was a weird year because I think that's the year that the Eagles are like – number one in DVOA, even though they were like 9-6 1 or something. And the Giants were better as defending champions than they were as actual champions. And then the Cardinals went on that weird run in the playoffs, even though they sucked at the end of the regular season. It was a strange year.
That was right. The Eagles sort of late in the season had a run, and then the Cardinals, Kurt Warner went ham against the Eagles in the playoffs.
The Rams win the division 98% of the time with a win and 24% with a loss. They win the Super Bowl 40% of sims where they win this game and 24% with a loss. The Seahawks win the division 65% of the time if they win this game and 1% with a loss.
Yeah.
They win the Super Bowl 29% with a win and 16% with a loss. So obviously, this game is very important. It is very likely that whoever wins the NFC West is the one seed in the NFC. Brian Knowles had me do this. The odds that Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles are the 1, 5, and 6 seeds is 72%.
Now go through that for me again because that went quickly.
The odds that the number one seed and the top two wild cards
Okay.
all NFC West teams.
Oh, okay.
Is 72%.
Heavens.
So it's very likely that whoever wins that division is the number one seed.
I thought he was trying to go for some Rams Chargers have to split the stadium thing, but that's not going to happen in most of these scenarios.
No, the Chargers are very unlikely. The Chargers are probably going on the road.
They're on the road, et cetera. And you want that number one seed to get away from the other teams in the NFC West.
Like, right. I mean, it's not quite in the AFC. I feel like you want the number one seed because the teams are so equal this year that you just want to get away from the possibility of losing in the first round.
Right. Right.
In the NFC, it's more just to get the home field advantage.
Take me. And then everyone else is like, well, because those teams are coming for you. They're going to go to Charlotte. I mean, Philly is not that hard. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I'll go to Philly. That's not that crazy. You want to get out of this because you don't want them coming for you the following week.
Yeah. Puka Nacua made a little bit of news this week. And we've talked about whether we were going to comment on it. And I just I don't know what to make of Puka Nacua. First of all, I'd like to say that apparently, unlike the rest of the media, I don't care that he said bad things about officiating.
No, gosh, no.
That's whatever.
The league cares, but yeah, we don't care.
What I care about is this weird anti-Semitic thing where they're going to do some kind of covetous Jew dance after he scores his next touchdown, which, by the way, I'm guessing right now he is not going to do because his,
I sure hope not.
Somebody's agent told him, don't do that.
Yes.
It's complicated by the fact that this weird streamer guy, first of all, they tried to get weird streamer guys into the Rams facility, and Sean McVay was having none of that. So good on Sean McVay.
And Puka sounded shocked that Sean McVay wasn't like down for this.
And
like, the boss was mad. Like, yeah.
It's complicated by the fact that the streamer is this right-wing nutcase who's also Jewish.
Yes.
So yeah. He's like a self-hating Jew. I don't know. I mean, apparently Puka has very right-wing political beliefs, and that's fine. He's entitled to his political beliefs. And I've long been of the belief that there are so many liberals and conservatives in the National Football League that you are absolutely stuck rooting for people whose politics are the opposite of yours.
Of course.
There's no question. If you are a right-wing conservative, I guarantee you, that you root for some athlete, likely African-American, who is very liberal. And if you're very liberal, of course, you're rooting for some athlete who's very right-wing. But I don't really truck with anti-Semitism, but I can't tell whether Puka just went along with whatever this guy was saying and didn't realize what he was doing or completely realized what he was doing. I have no idea. It's
in a high school,
mind-boggling that this is even a thing that even happened.
Right. In a high school setting, we would be like, oh, these guys were like on their Twitch stream, their Discord, their Snapchat, whatever, and they thought it was funny. And maybe they thought one of the guys gave them a pass to say these things, whether it was anti-Semitic, racial, or whatever. And as a school, you'd have to, like, you bring them into the principal's office, you bring the guidance people in, and you try to come up with, like, a restorative justice plan that makes sense, that isn't like, okay, well, you're expelled forever for saying this because that doesn't seem appropriate. But at the same time, doesn't trivialize the idea that this is hurtful, this is hateful, that this is inappropriate. And the reason why I'm bringing up high school about this, about a 24-year-old man, is we're talking about going on a Twitch stream and saying stuff like,
yeah, I mean, we need to remember that 24-year-old football players are the generation that's in high school right now. They're only a couple years older than those guys.
Right.
And so for those of us who are older, like you and me,
right,
this is like our kids' generation.
Literally.
And we don't understand though.
Right. To be honest. They'll do things like this and they got to recognize it's like, yeah, you're not just talking with your three friends in the room here. You're talking to the world and these things are hurtful and these things are heard and seen by other people who might not think it's a joke or might not be in on the joke. Or you personally, Puka Nuko, might not understand what you think this joke is that you're doing, that you're being goaded into perhaps by this other guy. Long story short, he ain't suspended. He's playing tonight.
No, he's playing tonight. He's not suspended. And I'm going to guess again that his agent told him, don't do anything.
Here. I do not want to see that tonight.
Yeah. And I would hope that he's been given a stern talking to and this kind of stuff goes away.
Right.
And I do remember DeSean Jackson making comments a few years back. And I do want to say it is not Julian Edelman's job to talk down every receiver in the National Football League who makes anti-Semitic comments.
Right, right.
Let Julian Edelman have his life, okay?
Yes, right. Like, his phone doesn't have to ring off the hook every time you need this. And bring him into the commissioner's office. Have a good, long sit-down. Get the Ned Beatty speech from the commissioner about this. Something that demonstrates, like, oh, no, we recognize there's a severity here. I'm not saying suspend the guy for playoffs or some goofy thing like that. Let's make sure this conversation moves forward. That Puka knows,
yes,
that we aren't just being a bunch of libtards or something like that when you say stuff like that.
Right, I agree with you. Now, from a football perspective, he's obviously very important tonight because Davante Adams is doubtful,
yes,
and very unlikely to play. And I rewatched the first Rams Seahawks game, and what really struck me was the inability of the Rams to get anybody open against the Seahawks coverage because they only had 5 pressures on Stafford with no sacks. Mm-hmm. So it's not that he was constantly under pressure. It's that nobody was open. And the Seahawks have really good stats against 12 and 13 personnel, although obviously a lot of that 13 personnel stats is
against
that first game against
the Rams. against the Rams. Yes. Yeah.
But it's really interesting. I will say the Seahawks defense is only 19th against tight ends.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And of course the Rams, if they're going to go 13 personnel, it's going to be tight ends. So can the Seahawks cover, you know, Colby Parkinson and Ferguson? I keep wanting to call him Turd Ferguson. Saturday Night Live.
Oh God.
I know his name is Terrence. But I keep wanting to call him Turd Ferguson. The running game also, it's the number one running game versus the number one run defense by DVOA. And in the first game, the Rams had 119 yards on 22 carries, but uh-huh. I think 62 of those yards were two carries.
Right, a couple of big plays.
For the most part, success rate-wise, the Rams were not getting it done. They had two long carries by Kyren Williams.
We've talked about that 13 personnel. It does create this unique challenge for defenses. Unique to modern NFL. It's almost like a high school challenge. Can you cover all these gaps? Can you do run fits to all these gaps while playing behind it?
Right. I think the first game, the Seahawks did.
They've got really stout defensive linemen. They can rotate defensive linemen to keep them from getting gas, to get bigger guys out there. They've got sort of a way to working against this. I'll say this. We mentioned Devontae Adams. That's a big one. Brandon Fiske for the Rams is questionable. He's one of their edges. Yep. Left tackle Charles Cross for the Seahawks is out.
Yeah, that's a big one, especially because Darnold was pressured like 14 times or something in the first game. And even though he wasn't sacked, that was where the interceptions came from for the most part.
Right, right. Backup Josh Jones has played a little bit this year. He is a veteran. Cross has had a really, really good year. He's an important piece for the Seahawks.
I do want to bring attention to the piece that Brian Knowles wrote on FTN about this game. Darnold throwing to receivers that we categorized as not open.
Okay.
Through week 10, 6.5 yards per attempt. Since week 11, 3.9 yards per attempt, which is ahead of Marcus Mariota and two Cleveland quarterbacks, and that's it.
So that's like
so his ability to thread the needle mm-hmm. when guys are covered has gone away, and I'm guessing that a lot of that has to do with pressure.
Probably has to do with pressure because he's not lost guys. Cooper Kupp's out there. Arroyo's been out, but I can't imagine like the rookie tight end is the difference.
No, no. Plus they have Shaheed now. Shaheed's a good player.
Yes. Yeah.
The thing is the Seahawks, right? It's like they've been so good in DVOA because their defense has been so good the last few weeks.
Yes.
Their offense has declined. Their offense in the last few weeks is slightly below average.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I come down to this game is – I feel like I don't think the Seahawks offense is getting better. No. But on the other hand, I don't think the Rams are going to go 2 for 11 on third down again.
No.
So this line moved. It was Rams minus one. Now it's like Seahawks minus 1.5.
Oh.
But I feel the Rams on this one, even though it's in Seattle.
That is.
Even though there's no Devontae Adams.
That sounds like the public overreacting to Devontae Adams like he's like five Randy Mosses or something like that. The Charles Cross injury is the one that actually hits me. It's like that puts me over the edge, hammering the Rams.
Andrew Daly says, how important is it throwing to guys who aren't open? If Darnold just doesn't attempt tight window throws, does his interception risk go way down? Well, yeah, but sometimes there is nothing but tight window. There are some plays in which you don't have an open guy, and it's either throw it away, and at a certain point you can't throw it away all the time. You have to try to make those throws.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell.
Feldenstein says, pre-Rams game, Darnold had about twice as many highlight throws and explosive plays than turnover-worthy throws. He had the confidence to make those throws. Yeah, his confidence has gone away a little bit, and I think. Okay. So you're like me. You prefer the Rams. I mean, no surprise if the Seahawks win, but I think the Rams. I think the Rams are the better team.
Right. I think the Rams are the better team right now. I'm going with the Rams.
Saturday night. The 9-4-1 Packers at the 10-4 Bears. Packers make the playoffs 99% if they win, 77% if they lose. And they win the division 82% if they win and 13% if they lose.
Mm.
Bears make the playoffs 93% if they win and 59% if they lose and win the division 76% if they win and 14% if they lose. I think if I remember correctly, the way it works is the Bears have some tiebreakers in the division, but the Packers are better for winning a wild card. Probably going to tie.
That sounds right. I am very tilted right now because NFL GSIS is down. And like all my cheat sheets are gone.
The Packers, of course, won 28-21. That was only 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. The Bears came down at the end to try to tie it. And Williams threw the interception in the end zone.
Yes.
And the big question I think we're all asking about this game is whether the Packers can get pressure without Micah Parsons. The Packers were a top 10 defense last year without Micah Parsons.
Right.
And it's mostly the same guys except for Devontae Wyatt being hurt.
Right.
But the pressure, the problem with last year's defense was they didn't get pressure.
Right.
And this problem with this year's defense is there's no one getting pressure other than Micah Parsons, and now they're living without Micah Parsons.
Yeah, right. And last year they had so I'm drawing a blank. They traded the Cowboys for Parsons, defensive tackle, Clark. They don't have Clark this year.
They don't have Clark this year. He went to
you don't have Clark. You don't have Parsons. And you don't have Wyatt. You don't have right now, it looks like I'm drawing a complete blank. Evan Williams is probably going to be out at safety. That's a problem. Good news for the Packers is that Christian Watson's talking like he's going to play. That turned out to be a false alarm last week in terms of how injured he is. He's really talking it up like he's going to be back. They're going to need him. Other side of the ball real quick, Roma Dunze, Luther Burden, did not practice. Very big deal because there's a lot of yak plays in the Bears offense. They need Burden for the yak. They need Dunze for the vertical threat. DeAndre Swift, Cole Kmet were limited. One more thing. Lowe's down to 16 that night in Gary, Indiana, where the Bears play now. And 10 to 20 mile an hour winds, all of which could favor the team that likes to pound the rock a little bit more.
Which is the Bears. I mean, the Packers can run. They have Josh Jacobs, but the Bears are like very run heavy team. I think they're going to try to run a lot. Here, an interesting stat about Caleb Williams and pressure, by the way. Williams is number 9 in DVOA when pressured, but 28th when not pressured.
Right.
It's still better to not be pressured.
Yes.
But relative to other quarterbacks, he handles pressure pretty well.
Right. That's going to give him a chance to scramble and make a play on the run. It's kind of like you do almost want him sitting in the pocket and trying to make the read and make the throw, because that's where you get this very odd, inaccurate version of Caleb Williams.
The line is Packers -1 in Chicago.
I'm just feeling the Bears. I feel like that's an overreaction because of the Parsons injury, because of all the things you said.
Yeah. I think this one is another one that's very close to a 50-50. If I had to pick, I would pick the Bears because they're at home and because of the Parsons injury, but it's the Packers are the better team. I think
Packers are the better team. If we wake up and Adunze and Burden aren't playing on Saturday, then I probably switch to Packers because I don't see how they're generating offense without those guys.
Big Cheese says, I'm hoping the Packers keep blitzing him so he picks them apart. Caleb Williams against the blitz in the first game, 6 of 11, only 58 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, so not much.
So not fantastic.
Right.
All right, let's talk about some Sunday games. We'll start in the NFC South with the 7-7 Bucks at the 7-7 Panthers.
No!
Buccaneers make the playoffs 95% if they win, 55% if they lose. And if, as you can imagine, for the Panthers, it's the opposite because these teams are not winning wild cards. Panthers 45% with a win, 5% with a loss. A big deal here is Bucks have tiebreakers. Yeah. And next week, the Bucs play Miami and Quinn Ewers, while the Buccaneers play Seattle.
Panthers play Seattle, yeah.
The Panthers play Seattle while the Buccaneers play the Dolphins.
Right.
The Bucs defense has struggled the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. The passing game has struggled, but the running game has been better, which kind of evens things out for their offense. But the defense has really declined against both the pass and the run. And I looked at this is really interesting from ESPN. When they do not pressure the opposing quarterback, the Bucs have gone from allowing 8 yards a play to 8.7 yards a play. Mm-hmm. When they do pressure the opposing quarterback, they have gone from allowing 2.3 to 6.2.
So they're pressuring them, and the guy, the quarterback's getting away.
Completing passes anyway. Yep.
Right. That points to a problem in the secondary, especially since they're blitzing to get pressure.
And Zion McCollum is out. And now Kendall Vildor is their number two corner.
And Zion McCollum was not good.
Right. But Kendall Vildor is worse.
Right. He's probably worse. And there's so much intricate blitzing. Bowles likes the zone blitz concepts. I think I've seen a couple examples of them finding the defensive lineman in coverage, you know, finding the edge rusher who dropped, the linebacker who should be like, who shouldn't be like in a deep zone. They find him a lot. And Lavonte David, future Hall of Famer, I don't think he's having a phenomenal year, but he did not practice. They could be without Lavonte David, who is the captain and quarterback of that defense.
Yeah. I will say that when you talk about the Tampa offense, Baker Mayfield is 37th against man.
Oh my God.
And 11th against zone. And a lot of that is Mike Evans being out.
Right.
But the Panthers are mostly a zone team. And this is an offense that has played much better against zone this year.
Right. It gives them a chance, I think, to pick them apart a little bit. A couple of injuries on the other side for the Panthers. Tet McMillan, foot, did not practice. That's a big deal. Tet McMillan.
Oh, if he doesn't play, that's a very big deal, yes.
That is a very big deal. Also, Ike Ekwonu, the offensive tackle, who had a colorful game, let's put it that way, against the Saints. He was a do-not-practice. They have a veteran backup, Josh Nojman is the backup. But Ike can run hot and cold, let's put it that way.
Andrew Daly says, it sounds like two bad teams take the divisional home dog. And yes, the Panthers are at home, and they are three-point underdogs, and that is who I would take in this game, is the Panthers, because they're underdogs at home. I don't like either of these teams right now. But, you know, if you think the most likely result is they split home and home, that would mean the Panthers would win this one and the Bucks would win in Week 18, which means it's very likely we will be subjected nationally to Bucks-Panthers in Week 18.
Week 18 in like the night game, in like the winner
winner makes the playoffs. Yeah.
Buccaneers, please prevent this from happening. Do everything possible to prevent this from happening. Buccaneers, Todd Bowles, we reach out to you. We beseech you. I cannot believe in the Panthers. The Panthers are this fourth down. Look what we did. Hooray. And it just keeps happening and happening and happening. I like the advice, because it's so simple though. I like the advice.
Yeah. A better game at 4 p.m. is 10-4 Jaguars at the 12-2 Broncos. Jags win the number one seed 20% of the time when they win, and not if they lose. Broncos get the number one seed 95% of the time when they win, and 60% when they lose. That is why the Broncos are our clear AFC favorites, because they're the clear favorite to get the one seed. It's not that they're that much better than the rest of the teams in the AFC. I was saying on the Mina Kimes, I did Mina Kimes yesterday. It'll be out later today. I'm not really a Chargers believer.
Right.
And I don't believe in the AFC North winner.
Right.
Other than that, I think the other five teams in the AFC, it's anybody's ball game. And Denver's only advantage is that they are going to have the number one seed.
But that's a huge advantage, because everybody has beat them each other up for a week. And when we do probabilities, that's a die roll that they don't have to roll.
Yes, absolutely. Trevor Lawrence playing much better over the last few weeks. For example, when he's under pressure, and you're going to be under pressure against the Broncos.
Oh, yes.
Since week 10, he is 7th in DVOA under pressure. And what's interesting is, you usually say the way to break down pressure is to run the ball. The Jaguars' run offense is only 26th since week 10, and Bashaul Tootin is injured. So he's just ATN.
Yeah, he's been playing very, very well as like the committee guy.
Tootin has. So their run offense is missing the really good rookie, and they're declined in recent weeks. However, the Broncos' run defense has also declined in recent weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like the struggling running game against the struggling run defense. Which one will win out?
Right, right. And the team that does a lot of fourth quarter magic versus the team that seems to be playing the Jets all the time in the Jaguars. I went back and watched the Jaguars game. First of all, Jakobi Meyers has made a huge difference.
He's had made a huge difference for them, yes.
Right. Replacing the – we have this Travis Hunter experimental thing going on with, here's a normal receiver doing normal receiver things. That's kind of been a big difference maker. They haven't really cut down on the penalties. They haven't really cut down on the drop passes either. There's still like two or three drop passes a game. It's just that they're in control of these games because they're in the lead early. Their defensive front four is very good at just like shutting down opponents, keeping track of the lead, and then you know they can sit on the game. So it makes it hard for me to like really prognosticate how much the Jaguars have improved.
Yeah, so that's not as likely to happen in this game.
No, right, right.
Is that, you know, they're not going to have that early lead, I don't think. Also interesting is Bo Nix is much better against man than zone. Mm-hmm. And the Jaguars are sixth in how frequently they play zone. So okay. That could slow Nix down because he's not as good at finding holes in zone as other quarterbacks are. Jaguars' defense, by the way, has been way better than anybody expected this year.
Yes, the Jaguars
it's hard to name the guys on that defense, but they've played real well.
Right. Trevon Walker was hurt for a couple months, come back. He made a couple big stops. Hines Allen, Eric Armstead on the front four, all playing well. The guys in the back, I'd have to start, I'd be guessing here.
Devin Lloyd obviously had those interceptions early on at linebacker, and Oluokun is there, and trying to name their cornerbacks is impossible.
I think they're all named Williams. Nix is, I believe, the second best rollout passer in the NFL right now in terms of going on the road. Sam Darnold's number one. But if you've watched the Seahawks, a lot of what they were trying to do, especially early in the year, get Darnold out to the edge and then get the ball over the top there. That's what they want to do, I think. And then that probably goes in with man coverage. You're going on a bootleg. You got guys coming across against man. They're going to get a step. You can make those completions. If you're playing zone against them and it's working, that's where you get the Bo Nix who's throwing a check down for a gain of two.
And it prevents Bo Nix from scrambling.
Yes, it also prevents him from scrambling. He's a very positive scrambler.
The line is Broncos -3.
Yeah, it's so hard.
The system likes the Jags. I think I like the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another – we have a lot of these games this week where it's pretty 50-50.
It's pretty 50-50. I don't know, like the fourth down magic, the fourth quarter magic, I mean, that we saw from the Broncos earlier in the year. That makes me think they're helium inflated. The Jaguars' schedule the last couple of weeks make me think they're helium inflated. I'm probably just going to chalk on this one and say Broncos at home.
Yeah.
Playing very well, balanced team. Less mistake prone.
Steelers 8-6 at Lions 8-6. Steelers make the playoffs 89% with a win and 68% with a loss. Lions 49% with a win and 15% with a loss.
Wow.
Although obviously that will be very different depending on what happens the night before with Chicago and Green Bay.
Yes. Yes.
Derek Harmon will be back for the Steelers, but TJ Watt, we still don't know.
Yep.
And Jared Goff, of course, is, you know, every year he's number one in DVOA without pressure, and he's number 24 with pressure. So how much pressure is Pittsburgh getting on him?
Right. Officially, Mike Tomlin yesterday, quote, no new news on TJ, unquote. Thank you, Tomlin. Also, Nick Herbig, who has been stepping up a lot in Watt's absence and, like, throughout the season. He's unsure for Sunday. I believe that's in the injury, but I'm not 100% certain what the injury is.
Yeah, the other thing I think, thinking about the Lions and the Steelers that I wrote down was, who's going to cover DK Metcalf? The only corner for the Lions who's not like 5'8" is Rockwood.
Oh, God, that's going to be 4,000 contact penalties.
Who's like 6 feet, which is still 3 inches lighter than, so short, 3 inches shorter than yeah,
that's not a good matchup.
Fraser wants to know, how are the Steelers' projections so high? Doesn't the Week 18 game almost always determine that playoff spot? Yeah, I think that in situations where the Week 18 game doesn't determine that playoff spot, it always will go to the Steelers. Because if you look at who they play in each week, I think the Steelers have it easier than the Ravens, and they have a one-game lead.
Yeah, the one-game lead is such a big part of that.
So it's more likely that we go into that last game with the Steelers having a two-game lead on the Ravens than right. It is that we go into that last game with the Ravens having a two-game lead on the Steelers. That's not going to happen, right?
Right, right. It's how the probabilities all fan out.
Steelers really dominated in the trenches. The ESPN block rates, obviously the injuries will play some part in this, but the Steelers are fourth pass block and fourth pass rush. The Lions are 29th pass block and 27th pass rush.
You really saw that in the last couple of weeks with the pass protection.
The guards, the interior of the Lions line, is, you know, the tackles are good, but the interior is not what it's been in past years.
Right, and that's been both on both sides. For the Lions, you've seen the interior has kind of crumbled for Goff. For Aaron Rodgers, a couple of sacks on Monday night, but overall, he's had time to throw, and that made a huge difference against the Ravens.
The line is a Detroit minus 7.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this one is not a 50-50. This is a one with a big line.
Okay, well, what's the system say?
Lions barely.
I'll do it.
Lions, yeah.
I'll do it. This feels like just the whole narrative. Backs to the wall. They're going to go out there. They're going to be, like, out of their minds. You know, it's a familiar foe in Aaron Rodgers for some of these guys. So,
and they're a good tackling defense, which is important against all those short Rodgers passes.
You're saying the Dolphins' tackling wasn't excellent on Monday night?
Yes.
The guys were running in the other direction.
And the game is indoors, so we don't have to worry about whether Goff is as bad in the cold as Tagovailoa is.
I'm not sure if it's Tua or if the entire team. If it was McDaniel, like, none of us want to be here at all. That's the way it looked from, like, the first quarter on.
But the amazing thing is that that's not how it's looked the last few weeks. All of a sudden, it looked like that this week. But he had had them playing really hard the last few weeks, including Buffalo.
I think they were playing hard in the first quarter.
Yeah. And then they were like, all right, we're done. I can understand. I think I put this out on Blue Sky, but I was like, I don't want to get hit in 15-degree temperatures. I don't even want to stand in the stands in 15-degree temperatures. Like, I understand why players don't want to necessarily get hit in 15-degree temperatures.
We're 55-year-old men.
Yeah.
We're not getting paid for that.
11-3 Patriots at the 7-7 Ravens.
Yes.
Patriots get the one seed 13% if they win. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much out of it if they lose. They win the division 74% if they win and 54% if they lose. Mm-hmm. Ravens make the playoffs 36% with a win and 15% with a loss. The big thing here is the Ravens' difficulty bringing pressure.
Yeah.
Right? They're like 26th in pressure rate. So they probably would want to blitz. And you don't blitz Drake May. He's no longer the best quarterback in the league against the blitz because Brock Purdy now has enough attempts to qualify.
Okay.
So he's now the number two quarterback in the league against the blitz.
Right.
Hitchhiker's Pie says Ravens game plan 100% run up the middle. I don't know what the status is of Robert Spillane.
He was in a walking boot yesterday.
Oh, so he's probably not playing again. And Milton Williams is still out. So, run on the Patriots up the middle is definitely going to be a problem.
Yeah, let me give you the update as of yesterday. Spillane was walking around in a walking boot. Christian Ellis, the other linebacker who's been playing well, he missed practice on Wednesday. So did Carlton Davis. So did Marcus Jones. Harold Landry missed it, but he's been taking veteran days. And like you said, Milton Williams is out. Very banged up Patriots defense right now.
Ravens, on the other hand, lost Teddy Buchanan for the season.
Yes.
So Trenton Simpson replaces him. Simpson was originally supposed to be that guy, and then Buchanan outplayed him, and he lost the job to Buchanan. So Buchanan is, or at least the Ravens believe, that he's better. So
Lamar Jackson has a quote-unquote flu deal, so he was out with some flu-like symptoms. Ronnie Stanley will probably play, but he was banged up. He had to leave the game. They said he could have come back in. That's something to monitor as the week goes on.
A couple of other interesting splits. Lamar Jackson is really good on throws up the middle, but the Patriots' pass defense is much better up the middle than it is on the sides.
Right, although you're missing guys.
And then Drake May leads all quarterbacks in value on deep passes, and Baltimore is 20th against deep passes.
I think that's how you attack. It's going to be bombs versus inside runs.
Andrew Daly says, is Henderson busting a 60-yard touchdown every couple games in any way predictive, or is that mostly luck? I think that long plays are less predictive than being able to keep a high success rate, but they're not predictive.
Right.
Certain guys do have more long plays, but it's not as predictive as keeping the chains moving down the field.
He does have the explosive speed talent. He did have explosive plays regularly in Ohio State. There's indicators that's going to be the kind of player he is. It's more a matter of like the volume of them, you know, like the idea that you're going to get like two a game. That's not sustainable.
Right. Or one a game even.
Right. It's right.
More like one every couple of weeks. And what do you do in the weeks when you don't get that one?
Yes. That's a problem.
The line is actually Ravens -3.
And a question that I had doing on the mailbag, and someone was saying, like, why does DVOA and the spread, point spread, line up so often? And it's like, because you use the same formulas.
I mean, the fact is that the guys who make the spread in Vegas were doing things that are somewhat similar to me before I started.
Right.
And since I've started, they have started doing more things similar to me. I'm not trying to be egotistical here. I beat the spread the first few years.
Right.
I don't anymore.
Right.
Because what they do is now closer to what I do. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing.
Yes. And they probably had access to the same tools at around the same time that you were getting.
Yeah.
Too. So it's like, oh, we always wanted to do this. And then you start doing it. It's like, oh, that's how you, and then they can go in, or like that database opened up to them as well. But yeah, you're using very similar methods, different recipe, kind of the same ingredients.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why you come out with the idea that the Ravens, especially if you take out the games where Lamar Jackson didn't play, are a little bit better than the Patriots once you account for the schedule that the Patriots have played. That being said, I think these teams are pretty even. And even though the game's in Baltimore, I would take the Patriots as an underdog if I was going to bet on this game because right. They're the underdog.
Right. I probably would take the Patriots and the points. By the way, seasonably cold in Baltimore that night. Should not matter. Both of these are cold weather teams, although it does favor pounding the ball over trying to go bombs away. I don't know. I'm going to lean with the Patriots.
Yeah. But this, like a lot of games this week, it's like if the Ravens win, it's not, I mean, they're favored, right? Like, yes. To me, with a lot of games this week, the shock would be a blowout.
Yes.
Right? It's not. Whoever wins Seahawks Rams, it's a big win, would shock me. It's not whoever wins Ravens Patriots or whoever wins Bucks Panthers. It's a big win, would shock me. What I'm expecting are close games.
Right. The only blowout I could see of the ones we talked about would be, well, the Lions blow the Steelers out because, you know, they just roll
I
up.
I think that, yes, I agree with that.
Possible. But like the other ones don't seem like that's going to happen.
All right, that does it for today's show. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for listening to us as a podcast. We'll be back next week, but put it on your calendar that the next 2 weeks, our shows will be Monday and Wednesday at 11 a.m. rather than Monday and Thursday. So we will be here Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve rather than Christmas Day and New Year's Day for the next couple of weeks. He's Mike Tenier. I'm Aaron Schatz. So long, everybody. We'll talk to you again on Monday.